You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned.
And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
Susie Hunt.
And we have a reoccurring guest with us today.
Officially named reoccurring guest now. Dawn is back.
Now, I know you were pretty excited when we announced this. This is episode 47, continuing our comic book horror movies, which... this is kind of a cheat, but we'll get into that. With Cemetery Man from, 1994, also known as De La Morte, De La More, and Demons 95. So, I know you said that you were excited, so what is it about this film that got you excited to join us?
Oh my god, come on, this is great. Nobody knows of this film. That's why I was so excited when it showed up, and I own a copy of it, which I was like, oh my god. Yeah, I own a copy. Oh, no, trust me, when I saw that, I think I have to say it had to be Media Play, so it was like over 20 years ago now. It's used. I can see the used sticker on the back of it, so somebody returned it. I don't know why, because it's brilliant.
Right?
I couldn't imagine why.
I can already see one direction somebody's going.
I have a feeling, I mean, we're going to go around the table in a second, but I have a feeling, I think this might be a 2v2 match here. But yeah, let's see. Maurice, what did you feel about this movie?
First time watcher, last time watcher. it was ridiculous. Made no sense. The acting was terrible. The only thing good about it was Hellraiser by Ozzy Osbourne.
Wow, so not a fan at all, huh?
No, it was not good at all, in my opinion. Not even a bad good. Like, I would never want to watch this movie again.
Man, and here I watched it twice just for the show.
Oh, I was already on my third try. Or my
third. Well, Susie, what did you think of this one?
So you mentioned that you feel it's going to go two against two.
Uh-huh.
I'm on Team Maurice. I wanted to like this movie so much. And I'm sitting there, and it was a much better YouTube transfer than that abomination that was Dolly Dearest. But I'm sitting there watching, and it's bad when I'm, like, clicking down on the Roku remote, like, how much longer do I have to endure? How much longer? What do you mean there's still an hour left?
I did that with 45 minutes left.
Oh, my God. Like, I really wanted to like this movie. I mean, it looked like... the cinematography, it looked like a B full moon movie. And for me to say a B full moon movie, that's something right there. That had props from a Spirit Halloween store. Like, it was filmed in a Spirit Halloween store. I just couldn't. I tried. I really, really tried. I thought it was going to pick up when Valentina's severed head starts hopping through the cemetery following, I'm just going to call him Dopey. Dopey and Groot. Those are the two names I gave for him. I thought it was going to pick up from there, and it really didn't. I wanted to like it so bad, but it was just so bad.
What an insult to Groot and Dopey.
Oh, come on. Nagi's a lovable character.
Nagi's awesome. Come on.
Yeah, he made me want to have some Nagi with some rum in it.
See, now I am definitely Team Dawn on this one. I really enjoy this film. I first heard of it in the late 90s, actually while I was working at Media Play. One of the guys who worked there, Brian, he was kind of like a film buff, but he really liked weird horror films. Like, that was one of his fortes. So this was one of the movies he kept telling me about, and I never got around to seeing it until the early 2000s when I found a bootleg copy on eBay, and I bought it and watched it and fell in love. And I think it's so fucking weird, but it's that enjoyable kind of weird where I'm like, what the fuck is gonna happen next? Like, it, I will openly admit, this is one of those films that I like because it's strange. And I know I'm kind of hypocritical here because I used to bitch about people saying that movies were good because they're strange. I will say, I'm not going to say the movie's good. I just like it because it's weird. Like, each scene, it feels like a collection of comic strips, which does make sense, but each scene seems almost like it's not connected to the next. So
that's it, because of terrible writing.
Well, no, it's...
it's horror goal.
But if you look at the actual scenes that we're watching, each one feels like its own little vignette. They feel like a three-panel comic strip, which, again,
it may feel like that, but I think it's purposely because that's how they meant it.
Exactly. The guy who created the character or created the story, and of course I didn't write down his name, but he's also the guy who created Dylan Dog, which I will get into in a second. But he did comic strips and comic books. So this was written with a very comic strip kind of vibe, which is why each scene is disjointed like that. And it does flow in an overall arc. It is all about, you know, love and loss and death and return and all that kind of stuff. But each scene is its own individual thing. So now, why I said that this was kind of a cheat being on our list is that a lot of people do refer to this as the first film adaptation of the comic book character Dylan Dog, who is a very popular Italian paranormal investigator. He actually did, I believe, show up in Hellboy at one point or do some kind of like spinoff with Hellboy. I know Mike Mignola drew him a couple of times on comic book covers. And there was a short-lived miniseries over here in the States from Dark Horse. But, and of course, the movie with Brandon Routh, which I didn't...
That was really good.
I didn't even finish watching it. I didn't really like it at all.
See, I enjoyed that movie.
I almost did put it on the list only because it's a more honest adaptation of the source material, whereas this was it's based on a book that the comic creator wrote. But now here's this weird tie, is that the look of Dylan Dog was inspired by the look of Rupert Everett, however you say his name, in a movie called Another Country. It was a 1980s movie, and the artist who drew Dylan Dog for the first time said that that's where he took the look from, was from Rupert. So when they were casting this film, the creator, I really wish I had wrote his name down, but the creator of Dylan Dog and Cemetery Man wanted to get him for the main role of Francesco Della Morte. Now, the character has appeared in the Dylan Dog comics, even though they're two separate characters. The film adaptation of this borrows a lot from the Dylan Dog comics. So it's like this weird kind of amalgamation of the comic books, a novel, inspiration for the character. And so, it is a cheat, as this was not a direct comic book, but it is tied in heavily to the Dylan Dog world. So,
When you told me that, I didn't even know it was like a comic book movie. I'm like, really? This was a comic book movie? Like, I was all kinds of confused.
Yeah, it's one of those things. A lot of people don't even recognize the American Dylan Dog movie. They're like, no, that's not an adaptation of it. And they call this the first adaptation of Dylan Dog, even though it's really not. Strange Italian horror.
I'd also like to add, now that you mentioned the strange Italian horror, that even though it was in English, it was like a bad full moon B movie with the set of from Spirit Halloween and horrible dubbing that wasn't even really dubbing. They were speaking English.
Right? But it was really hard to understand some of the shit they said. And I don't know.
And I couldn't turn on closed captioning because it was on YouTube.
The closed captioning on YouTube is fucking hilarious. I had it on for a while, and you're hearing what they're saying, but what the closed captioning is saying is completely wrong. Like every time they said Nagi, it said doggy, which is really funny. Oh man. But so, all right. So this is an hour and 45 minutes. Like I said, it came out in 1994. This is our third comic book, our third entry in the comic book horror movies. The director, I know I'm going to say all of these names wrong because you guys know I suck with names, but Michel Soavi, he's the guy, he was the actor in Demons that played the metal face guy. Yes. So if you guys remember that, he was that guy. And he also directed Stage Fright from 1987, not the musical remake from the early or the late 2000s. But this one was about the owl-headed axe murderer. It's actually a really fun movie. I wouldn't mind getting it on here at some point, another Italian horror. but he also did The Church, which I can't remember if Dario Argento wrote it. But that's the one that's known as, it's also known as Demons Part 3, even though it's not. So that fun naming convention of Italian horror movies where they're known as like 80 different things.
And isn't this considered Demons 2 in some?
Demons 5. Demons 95.
Oh, Demons 95?
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. It's weird. But so we have the main character, Francesco Della Morte, played by Rupert Everett. We would know him from stuff like Shakespeare in Love, A Midsummer Night's Dream. He was also in Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Good Lord, that's hard to say. And then he did voices in Shrek 2 and 3. Then we have Nagi. Now this one, good God, I'm going to butcher his name. Franco Haji Lazario. Now, I'd actually seen him in two other things, and one of them I would love to have on here. City of Lost Children, which is a really good flick. Mm-hmm. That has Ron Perlman in it. Really good movie. And it, beautiful. That's the thing that most people will take away from that film, is just how gorgeous it looks. And then this really bad werewolf movie called Brotherhood of the Wolf from the early 2000s. Do you guys remember that at all?
No.
Nope.
It's honestly, you're better off. It's a god-awful movie. But then she, the woman, played by Anna Falchi, apparently she's a model over in Italy. I don't really have any acting credits for her. This was pretty much it.
Titties not good enough?
No, I think that's why she stayed as a model. then we have Marshall Strano, played by Mickey Knox. He was the dippy cop that couldn't figure anything out. Also from Stage Fright, Ghoulies 2, The Godfather 3, and The X-Files. So then there's a bunch of people that weren't in anything, like Valentina, the doctor, Claudio's weird-ass girlfriend. None of them were in anything other than this.
I can't imagine why.
Right. Actually, most of the people on the list were not in much else. So the basic plot of this film, for anyone who hasn't seen it, is a cemetery watchman has to repeatedly kill corpses as they come back to life on the seventh day after they're buried. He kills them and reburies them, and that's just his life. So it's a very strange film.
And what's the term that they give them in this?
Returners.
The returners, yes.
Returners.
Yeah.
That's actually not zombies. Returners.
I didn't think that was too bad. Yeah, Maurice is not going to be happy with this one.
No.
But so the film opens on a close-up of the cleanest skull ever on film. Now, the thing that's funny about this is I'm pretty sure that was supposed to be an actual human skull and not like a plastic one. But Susie's right. It was straight out of Spirit Halloween store. So
it gave me such a Goonies vibe, actually. With that pan out.
Right.
It gave me a Goonies vibe. I'm like, isn't that how Goonies opened with the skull going in? I don't know.
What were you going to say, Reese?
I read in the trivia that most of the bones were real.
Probably in the ossuary or ossuary. I can't say the word.
Ossuary. I read that too. That some later of them were on. Real.
Yeah. Okay. But so we hear a phone ringing and we pan out from the skull. We see the phone on the table. And a man comes and answers the phone. Now, this is Franco, but we will find that out later. Or Francesco. He looks like he just hopped out of the shower. You know, he's talking on the phone. And we hear a knock at the door. So he goes to answer the door. And there's a corpse standing there. He just shoots it, like, super blasé, point blank, shoots it in the head. And then goes back to his phone conversation and lights a cigarette. Now we pan out to the cemetery and we get the title card. It just says, you know, Cemetery Man. While the credits are rolling, we also pan in on this snow globe, which will be important later. So we cut from the title card to Franco getting his helper Nagi to go rebury the zombie. So they're going and opening up the grave or cleaning up the grave and throwing the corpse in. And Franco's bitching about how the marble. Was it the marble coffin was a waste? And he's like, just pack them in dirt. So while they're doing that, another zombie comes back and he doesn't have his gun. So he grabs Nagi's spade and just hacks it in the head. And Nagi just looks like terrified of everything.
What I love is that when he does that, it's just like so nonchalant that like we already established just from that movement that he does this all the time.
Right.
just another day. Just got to kill somebody else now.
Another day in the cemetery. Yeah. But so now we get this little over narration of Franco kind of introducing himself. He says, "My name is Francesco della Morte." Weird name, isn't it? Francis of Death. Saint Francis of Death. I often thought of having it changed. Andre della Morte would be nice. That cracked me up. Because it would just be Andre of Death. But then he goes on to explain he's the watchman of the Buffalora Cemetery and that sometimes on the seventh day after death, these creatures return. So and he says he dubbed them returners. The only way to dispatch them is to split open their head. He says a bullet does nicely, but a spade will do in a pinch. So we get, you know, they kind of explain this is just a thing that happens. He says he doesn't know that if... He doesn't know if it's a plague that's happening all around the world, or if it's just something special about that cemetery, and we never find out either.
Thank God.
But so we cut to the next morning, and this little old lady with crutches comes to visit the graveyard, and she goes in and she keeps referring to Franco as an engineer, and he keeps saying, "I'm not an engineer." Now, I don't know if this is just something that was lost in translation, but this seems to be an ongoing joke because everyone keeps referring to him as an engineer and he keeps saying, "I'm not an engineer." I don't get it, but okay, that's just a thing that happens throughout the film. That she calls Nagi a cutie and continues to walk away. And Franco's like, "I'm not an engineer and you're no cutie." And Nagi hangs his head and starts raking the leaves again. Like, aww.
Aww.
But there's this weird moment where the wind starts blowing and Nagi is freaking out because he can't collect all the leaves up. And Franco says, like, how Nagi has a real affinity for leaves, can't stand it when the wind blows them away. And he talks about how, you know, basically Nagi is obviously special. He's, handicapped. And he goes on to say... His ID says visual markings, orb. So basically, he just looks like a circle. I was like, "Oh, poor Nagi." But he says, he lights a cigarette and he says, we're all just waiting for death anyway, and walks away. What was that?
Yep.
more mysterious things on the call?
Yeah.
It was Mr. Niyagi.
Mr. Niyagi? Niyagi.
Yep.
I feel like someone.
Yeah. Because that's all he says too, Niyagi. That's all he's. It's always like yeah. And somehow, and I've determined that it's like the Peanuts adults, mm-hmm. like the adults in Peanuts. Everyone understands him, but we don't know what he's saying.
Right. He reminded me of the Yarp guy from Hot Fuzz.
Sean, yeah.
Yarp.
But so now we cut to a funeral, and we see Francesco watching the funeral, and he's kind of oogling the widow, which is just fucking creepy. But he's sitting there eyeing her up, and then we cut to him obsessing over her in bed, wondering when he'll see her again.
Yeah, he was obsessing over her, all right.
And now, keep in mind, he doesn't know anything about her, nor do we. We never know her name. As I said in the credits, she's just listed as she. So apparently the name isn't important. So we cut. Oh, good.
Maybe her name is She-Ra.
Don't insult She-Ra, Princess of Power.
Because there will be another He-Man part coming up later on.
Yeah, there will.
See, this is why I wish this was like a video call to see my reaction right now. Just a hand over the face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a feeling that this was going to go this way. But so now, 2 weeks later, she comes back to like put flowers on her husband's grave. And Franco is just kind of creepily following her and trying to talk her up. She has no interest. He's telling her all about his, you know, his college degree and his house. And he's like, want to come see my house? And just trying to, like, impress her. And she is just in no mood whatsoever. Then he asks her about her late husband. And well, first he says, I'm sorry about your father. And she goes, husband. And we see the little picture of the guy on the grave, and he's this little old man. And he's like, how long has he been dead?
He's got a smirk.
Well, not yet. That's the funny thing. It changes. The picture changes multiple times. Because he goes, how long has he been dead? And she goes, 2 weeks. And he goes, oh, thank God. And she flips out on him. He meant, you know, because, you know, he didn't come back. And she obviously thinks he's being callous. So then she decides to tell him what for by telling him how great of a lover her daddy husband was. And when she's telling him, we cut back to the picture of the old man and he's smirking on the gravestone.
So I want to bring something up about this. He looks like he's about 100 years old in that picture.
Right.
Right.
But the dates on the tombstone, 1934 to 1993, he was only 59 years old, and he looked like he was 100. What kind of hard living did he do? Like all whiskey.
I was gonna say it was Italy, right? They're drinking like crazy.
Yeah, like wine.
Italy slash wine, France.
Wine, red meat, and prostitutes until he met. You know, he tied this girl down. Not well, maybe literally. I don't know.
All the love making he made to her made him old. He couldn't keep up with her because she was so young.
She took his essence and stole his youth.
I was just going to say she sucked out his life force.
Yep.
Yeah, she sucked already.
Well, I'm wondering because I was reading how it was done in parts of a real cemetery. So I'm wondering if they just randomly found a grave they like and stuck his picture on it. Just to have it. So it could be the dates of that person.
That's a very good possibility.
This guy looks about 60, sure.
So she tries to leave, and he's following behind her and eventually convinces her to stay by telling her that it's a small graveyard, but they have a lovely ossuary. Is that, how do you say ossuary? Is that it?
I've no idea. But I think you're skipping a part, because he goes and sees his friend with all the forms.
Oh, no, isn't that next?
Maybe. Maybe I messed up. I don't know.
Because I thought
I thought she came back. I thought she came back, and that's when she went to the
No, you're right. You're right. That is the third time she comes back. because she leaves and he says that he messed it all up. And then, yeah, then he goes to see the other Franco. You are correct. And
yeah, because he messes up like how everybody reacts when they mess up when they meet somebody they really like, and they're like, "Oh, I messed it up," and no, I'm gonna just go cry in this corner. He's just taking a shower and just like standing there.
stupid. Yeah.
He's taking a shower, rubbing one out. He'll be all right.
Well, I sure as hell hope not, because it showed the shower water, and that was pretty scummy looking. Yeah. It was brown and dirty. Oh, man, but yeah, as Don said, he goes to see his other friend, or, well, his only other friend other than Nagi, and they discuss how it's not fair that he's not getting paid overtime for dispatching the zombies. And he's like, "Oh, if you fill out an M3 form, we can contact the mayor about this." And he's just like, "Eh, whatever." And he says it's easier to shoot him. So he leaves. And this is the first time we get a hint of how the townsfolk look at Franco. He walks by a bunch of bikers and they start making fun of him for not having a dick. And like, I just wrote, what? Because at this point, we don't know anything about that yet. So it's like, okay. Now we cut to Nagi and Franco in a grave, and Nagi's the actual one working while Franco's just sitting there reading, and a flower blows into the grave, and Franco realizes it's from the widow, and he pops up and goes and follows her. So yeah, you were right. This is the third time that she shows up.
Oh, that's right. He couldn't be rubbing one out. He couldn't get it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yep, and it's the secret the whole town knows for some reason. Like, everybody in town knows.
But the funny thing is, he actually can get it up. And there's one little line of dialogue a little later where they pass by the bikers and they're making fun of him again. And Nagi does a meh, you know, and Franco goes, "Who do you think started that rumor? It's better if people think I'm weirder than I really am." And he walked, and they go on their merry way. So we find out that Franco started that rumor about himself, and we see him fucking a couple of times in the movie, so clearly it does work. But yeah, it is the secret that the town knows.
I hate to be rude here, but it's Francesco, not Franco. Franco is the friend. That's why it's confusing.
I'm calling it Franco. Because I'm going to keep fucking up Francesco. Oh, boy. But so he goes to, speak with the widow again. And she's not interested. She kind of ghosts him. And that's when he tells her that they have an ossuary. And she gets all turned on and excited. So
He also whispers that he's impotent. So that really turns around.
Well, I was going to say, there is the one version that does get turned on by that.
I know. Well,
but with, like, this version, the ossuary, too. But I was saying, like, with the ossuary, it's like he gave her oysters. And, like, it was just a 180 turn. Like, yep, let's go.
Oh, man. And then she, like, it's all creepy. And there's, like, it's half flooded. And they're walking through the water. She starts, like, sniffing death shrouds and, like, getting turned on. It's like, what the fuck is going on? It was so creepy. But, yeah, then they start making out. And, first he goes in for a kiss. And she says, "Not like this." And she grabs one of the death shrouds and wraps it around his face. And then says, "Like this," and kisses him. And so it's like, he's just got some moldy ass, dirty death shroud in his mouth.
But that scene is based on, that kiss is based on a painting called The Lovers,
yes,
by René Magritte. I actually looked up the painting online. And when we post the episode, I'm going to post a picture of the painting because it's beautiful.
It is. That's a good call to post it.
I thought she wanted him covered up so her dead husband wouldn't see who she was making out with.
Oh, no, she wants to share it with him later.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Because they shared everything together.
Well, that's the thing. She freaks out, backs up into a skeleton, which just happens to tear off her blouse.
Right. Because that could really happen.
That cracked me up because she's like, no, no. And the skeleton's arm just falls on her and just rips her shirt off.
It's so like not a only X-rated, It's like an X-rated Benny Hill.
Yeah, because she doesn't leave the cemetery either. She just runs out the door.
Right.
So not only does Francesco want her, but the skeleton wants her too.
Right. Well, you know, there might be something to that because he sniffs her shirt and then he must have been hanging out in there like all freaking night or all freaking day, because it looks like no time has passed. But when he walks outside, it's nighttime. And there's these little ghost lights, like little fireballs floating around, which he seems completely unfazed by, and just follows them to the topless widow who's standing by a fountain. She then shakes
she
wasn't
her topless. She had a she still had her brassiere on.
Well, true. partially topless.
Damn skeleton.
But I love it because she shakes her hair down like an 80s librarian going out for a night on the town.
I was going more like in a Whitesnake video.
I literally thought of Hot for Teacher as soon as it happened.
Yep.
Guys, this was 90s.
I know, but it looks like it was filmed in the 80s.
It does.
Yep.
Because those little balls of blue flame are on strings, and it's very obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Not those glowworms.
Which apparently is, like, something that happens in swamps. That's why I guess they did these lights, is that there are, like, little balls of lights that happen in swamps that just float around. Not fireflies or anything, but apparently right. These.
Swamp well,
that
gas.
That was last episode.
Yeah, that's when Swamp Thing farts. Oh man! So yeah, he and she start to make out on her husband's grave, and he asks her, he's like, "Why here? Why on your husband's grave?" And she goes, "We shared everything. I never kept anything from him. We trusted each other implicitly. He would have liked to know." And then he's like, "All right then."
You know, I kind of think it's rational.
But I love it because it cuts to the photo and the old man looks shocked and horrified. Oh, man. So they start going at it, and she's complaining about the ghosts, and he says that they like to watch. And but then he blows a little fireball away and it goes away. So the lady only wants stars. And then we get our first dem titties. And we cut. It's funny because we juxtapose them titties with Nagi eating spaghetti by the fistful.
Yeah, but he was watching them get it on, and I think he lost his appetite.
I wrote that. I said
he pushed his plate away after he saw that. He's like, "Oh, yeah."
Well, did you see that mound of spaghetti? Come on, that was a huge mound of spaghetti.
I saw a couple of mounds, but it wasn't the spaghetti.
He stopped eating, not because he was disgusted, but because, you know.
Yeah.
Which is why he takes a severed head later.
Oh, God. That's horrible.
It's probably true.
It probably is. Well, he is wiping her chin. Oh, never mind. That's gross. We cut to the grave and we see that a daddy hubby is waking up, and he comes back pretty pissed. He jumps out of the ground and she's like, "Wait, no, I can explain." And he starts. Oh, good.
When he's coming back to life, it's like he makes a little glory hole with his finger and like pokes it through, like poke, poke, poke.
That's true. He was just scratching at the wood with one finger.
And before he
had to make sure it was real.
Before he could make it big enough for it to be an actual glory hole, he looked through, saw it, and then hilarity ensues because went down to the cemetery looking for love. Da-na-na-na-na-na. Got there and her husband was buried. He went and bit her up.
Nice. We're already working on the second montage.
I was just about to say that.
Well, we do have a few gems from later episodes that I didn't get to in that first montage. So there was Swamp Thing and Hellboy, I believe, had some singing.
yeah.
But so yeah, he bites her and I forget what he says. He says something like "life goes on" and starts biting her. And then Francesco grabs an iron cross and like bashes him in the head with it, and it comes out of his mouth. And the whole time he was screaming for Nagi, and then Nagi comes running up with a towel over his shoulder and holding the gun, and he's like, "Oh, I don't need the gun now." And he goes, "Eh."
You know why he had the towel over his shoulder, right?
He was finishing up.
Yeah, he was cleaning himself up, and then he got interrupted. Rude.
Then he's like, "Go get the doctor!" And he runs off. So now Francesco is cradling the widow, and they're talking, and she's like, "Nothing will separate us, not even death." And he's like, "Not even death." And then she goes, "Blah," and just dies.
So she died from the scary, sexy times.
Which, oh my god, yeah, we got to get to that in a sec. But we see the dead widow, and he's watching her while looking back at his gun. So he's like kind of waiting to see, like, is she going to come back? Which I don't get, because it's the same day, and he's already established that it takes a couple of days. You know, it's 7 to be precise. Now, I know that number changes, but at this point, it's still 7 days. So why was he waiting for her to pop up on the same day? Doesn't make any sense. So now the next day the detective shows up. He wants to know what happened. He says for some reason he says that the doctor called him and explained to him that the widow had died there. And he goes, "What happened?" He goes, "It was her husband." He goes, "Oh yeah, he just popped up from the grave, raped her and bit her, huh?" And then he's like, "No, he didn't rape her." And then the doctor just happens to be there for no reason at all. Like, the doctor's just hanging out in the graveyard. And he's like, "Oh, she didn't die from the bite. She actually died of a heart attack. She died of fright. She had a heart attack while she was, doing it." And then I love it because he turns to Francesco and he's like, "Oh, I guess you're off the hook, my boy." And that's when he admits to being impotent. And
that's where I wrote my note. Like, does everyone in the whole town know this? Like, is this on like a billboard somewhere in the town? "Hey guys, this guy's impotent.
Welcome to Buffalora Cemetery. By the way, the watchman can't get it up." Oh man. So Francesco asks him, like, "Does she have any family?" And he's like, "Oh, no, no family, no friends." And he goes, "Then can I keep her here?" And he goes, "Oh, you can do whatever the fuck you want with her." I'm like, "Well, that wouldn't work over here. What the hell?" Anyway, they cut to Franco digging a grave. And then Nagi comes over, and he tells him if he digs the grave in his place, he'll buy him an ice cream. And he jumps in the grave, he's like, "Nah!" And he spits on his hands and starts digging a grave real fast. And so we cut to the next scene with them going out for ice cream. Now, this is where I said that they pass by the bikers and they're making fun of him not being able to get it up. And he comments to Nagi that he started the rumor. So we see the mayor and he's like, "Oh, engineer, come and sit with us." So again, with the engineer thing, I don't get it. But so they sit down at the mayor's table. And this is where we meet Victoria, the mayor's daughter. Now, Nagi is smitten with her immediately. And this was just fucked up because she kept referring to Nagi as an it.
She's Valentina, like, isn't it?
Yeah, Valentina. She kept going like, you know, "What's it doing?" And, "Oh, look, it can even cry." And it's like,
"Daddy, will you buy him for me?"
Right.
You know what I thought of at that part? Veruca Daddy, salt? I want a golden goose.
Exactly.
Gooses. Geeses. I want my geese to lay gold eggs for Easter.
That now, was really on point.
We missed the part where
I was gonna say, yeah, she
rises from the dead.
What? Oh, you're right. Yeah, we did. I did skip.
And
over
then that. She, yeah, because I wrote down one more dem titty shot because she rose up, her top came down, and then he shot her.
You're right. Yeah, so before the before we cut to Francesco digging the grave, he's sitting in the ossuary with the she's shrouded, and he's saying, "I don't want her to return. I don't want her to return." And she sits up, and he tells her like he didn't want this, and she says it'll be different with me than all the others. And she blows the shroud off of her. He raises his gun. It goes over top of him. We see dem titties, as Reese said. And then he fires, and we, you know, see her head blow off, and she falls down dead. And then he's digging the grave. Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't mean to skip over that. But
that's an important part.
I know. It actually, it is a very important part. I'm glad you called it out.
Where were you? And then we got the part with, and then now we're at the part with Nagi, and he gets nervous and throws up on Valentina.
Which is fucking hilarious.
I wrote Nagi is like Stan when he sees Wendy on South Park. And he just pukes up.
He so is.
I was nice about it. I just wrote down that he got a little nervous.
Well, he's shaking back and forth with his cheeks just filled. And she goes, "What's it doing? Dancing?" And he goes, no, he's about to." And then he goes, "Blah, blah," and just pukes all over.
She threw up at me.
But like, she takes it very calmly, though. She's like, "Oh, he threw," because the motorcycle boy, whatever his name is.
Oh, Claudio.
Claudio. Comes up, he comes up and he's like, "What happened?" "Oh, he puked on you." It was basically like, "Oh, that's okay. Come with me."
Well, she goes, "Claudio, he threw up on me." And he goes, "Oh, a new fad? Want to go for a ride?" It's like, wait, a new fad? Yeah, all the kids are just Italians.
Oh, see, I thought he said too bad.
I heard a new fad. Either way, it's hilarious.
Yeah, now that Don says that, I think he did say too bad. Like, it's too bad.
I could have sworn he said, so I don't know if it, too bad, like, that doesn't make sense, but...
Well, I'm not going back to watch it.
It's the too bad. Come for a ride.
Well, I'm going to go with a new fad, because I like to picture Italian teenagers doing this.
It's a man, Claudio!
Blarp!
What's it today?
So they run off on, or they drive off on the motorcycle. Nagi takes off, all embarrassed. Francesco gets up and he says to the mayor, he goes, "One of these days, I'm going to have to talk to you about the cemetery." And then he goes off after Nagi, and we get this little cutscene. It's kind of sad. It's Francesco and his little white punch bug driving along with Nagi running on the road. And he's like, "Oh, come on, Nagi, get in the car. It's not the first time you've puked over a lady." And he's like, "Nah." And he falls down. I'm like, "Oh, poor Nagi."
Poor Mr. Nagi.
So they get back to the cemetery, and the old lady with the crutches is walking out, and she says, "No one came to visit me today." She goes, "Not even the admiral, and he used to always bring me Sambuca." It's like, wait, what?
That was so random. Like, we talk about fodder dialogue in movies. Like, what was the fucking point of that?
Well, this is what I'm saying. Like, I feel like a lot of foreign films, there is just stuff that culturally we don't understand, because there is a scene in Ichi the Killer that it's burned into my memory forever. There was a scene transition where they're cutting to the Yakuza, and you just see an empty street and a random naked man run through the street going, "Ah." He just runs by the camera. They never explain it. They cut into the next scene, and that's it. That's all we get. So the first time I watched it, I'm like, what the fuck did I just see? What happened there?
So what's the cultural significance of that?
Of what, the naked man?
Yeah.
I have no idea. But what I'm saying is, I feel like that was some kind of a joke over there. Like, maybe it was riffing on something that we don't know.
Okay.
So maybe an admiral in Sambuca has something to do in Italy. Maybe. I don't know. Because I'm trying to explain why the fuck that was there. Oh, man.
Filler to keep the movie even longer than it should have been.
So we cut to Nagi in his apartment and Francesco in his above Nagi's apartment. And Nagi's all tore up and embarrassed. Francesco's trying to cheer him up by basically insulting him, which I don't understand. He's like, "Oh, one day you'll settle down with a poor creature just like yourself." It's like, Jesus.
And it could, And it could quite possibly just be ahead.
Well, then, I don't know why you care so much anyway. He goes, they all end up here eventually, some sooner rather than later.
And foreshadow!
And a quick foreshadow! Because we cut to the very next scene. And the bikers are... Oh, good.
Did I miss how Valentina died?
No, we're getting to that right now, which is one of the best parts of the movie. Yep. You probably spaced out, because I did for a moment, too, until this happened.
I don't remember her dying. I just remember her funeral.
You may have fallen asleep.
Did I fall asleep? Yeah, because
it was the mass funeral, but yeah. That's because of this whole scene coming up, yeah.
I must have dozed off.
This is on par with the kid in the Toxic Avenger who gets his head crushed.
Yes, it totally is. So yeah, we cut to the bikers on this winding road, and they're just driving along, and Valentina's yelling on Claudio's bike. She's all excited, and they turn the corner, and there's just a fucking bus of Boy Scouts.
Oh, that's right.
And nuns. Okay. Boy Scouts and nuns.
That's right. It was the church picnic. They just slam into the bus, and we see the Claudio and Valentina under the tires get smooshed. And then the other bikers all hit the bus, and the bus goes over the cliff. And this is just a fantastic shot. You guys got to admit, even not liking the movie, this was a funny scene. We cut to a random horse in a field.
Yeah, no, that was hilarious. And when the bus hit, the first thing I thought of after Toxic Avenger was those commercials, those law office commercials from the 90s that you always reference. I got hit by a bus.
Full of nuns and Boy Scouts.
Boy Scouts.
Oh, man.
Has this happened to you? Call 1-800-FUCKED-UP.
You may be entitled to financial compensation.
Was your horse scared by a bus flying off a cliff?
Do crashing buses scare your horses?
Oh my God, where was Jennifer Love Hewitt? Wasn't she the horse whisperer? Oh no, it was Ghost Whisperer.
Scarlett Johansson was the horse whisperer.
I get Ghost Whisperer and Horse Whisperer confused. Much like how I can never remember if my milkshake brings the boys to the yard or it's popping. I know one of them is my lip gloss, the other is a milkshake.
Oh Lordy.
But anyway.
So here's another question. Were Claudio and Valentina dating?
Supposedly, which we're going to get to in a sec here.
Right.
Where does this girlfriend come from?
The mayor's daughter. Yes. It was.
So yeah, we
this girlfriend just came out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to that. So we cut to the next scene, which is the mass funeral. And I love this because the cop is explaining to Francesco and Nagi how it was a bus full of Boy Scouts on a church picnic. And as the funeral procession is walking by them, there's a choir singing, "Never should I, never should I, never should I have gone on the church picnic." And they're like, "Never should I gone, and now I'll never go again." And it's like, holy shit, that's dark.
I would just like to interject for one moment and say that recording this episode of the podcast is much more fun than actually watching the fucking movie.
Well, now to be fair, I do always say that bad movies make for the best podcast.
They do. But Maurice, let me ask you this real quick. Would you rather, if you had to choose, absolutely had to watch either movie again, would it be Cemetery Man or Blood Rage?
Oh my goodness. It would have to be Cemetery Man. I don't want to watch Blood Rage I'll tell you what, if the terrorists are listening to me, that's how you get me to spill. I will tell you everything. If you make me watch Blood Rage.
Can I tell a really quick anecdote about work? So we're all working remotely. When you said the terrorists, it reminded me of this. So we're all working.
Where do you work?
It'll make sense in a moment. So we're all working remotely from home. My team, we have a group Skype chat, and our supervisor will call in and like listen to us, give coaching, stuff like that. So when she does that, we share our screen via Skype with her. Well, someone in my team didn't do it correctly. They had it instead of just an individual chat with her, they shared it with the whole team. So this one guy, I'm not going to name names, sends this message like an hour later. He's like, dude, I thought the feds were fucking watching me. I'm like, did you not recognize that that's someone's desktop? It's not the feds. It's not Big Brother. Someone just shared their desktop incorrectly. All right. That's my anecdote. Let's go.
That's awesome.
Can we continue?
Oh.
Shout out to my friend Nate from work. He's not the one that thought the feds was watching. I'm pretty sure he's the one who accidentally shared the screen with the whole team.
Nice. So now we have, like I said, the mass funeral. And we see all the coffins lined up next to each other. And this is where we get Claudio's random surprise girlfriend, who throws herself on the coffin and which has his destroyed motorcycle on top of it.
We'll get into more of that in a little bit. Fucking ridiculous. Those crazy Italians.
They do love their motorcycles.
Well, I want to add that it was a line of just plain coffins, and then there's a glass coffin, and then coffin with the motorcycle on top of it.
Do you know what Valentina's coffin reminded me of, and just the way she was dressed? And this movie did come out 2 years after Lucy. Lucy
and Dracula.
Stoker's Dracula. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they were riffing on. You know, or just flat up stealing.
Well, don't do that to Bram Stoker's Dracula, because that was a good movie. Even though Winona Ryder and Keanu and their accents.
But keep in mind, with Italian horror, they're known to just steal random other things. or do flat out sequels to movies that they have no rights to doing sequels to. But she throws herself on the dirt bike coffin. And it is screaming that, you know, Claudio, don't leave me. And then the mother gets all pissed and she's like, you are not dating him. He was promised to the mayor's daughter. Get away. She's like throwing her off the coffin. It was such a random moment. But then we cut to the mayor looking at his daughter in the glass coffin, and he's going on about how horrible this is. And he says, like, you know, just yesterday she was alive. Do you remember? Poor Nagi even threw up on her and she took it so well. And then he goes, and then she dies on the eve of the elections.
He's probably the worst mayor since Mayor McCheese.
Hey, Mayor McCheese was a very good mayor.
He is the mayoral equivalent of, never mind, we don't want this to get political.
Yeah.
That's why I said Mayor McCheese. Yes. I can't get too political with that.
In case the Don, terrorists are listening.
Hey.
Don got a little upset, but we can handle that.
At least Mayor McCheese has the grimace in his corner. That's all I'm going to say.
And the Hamburglar.
Oh, you know what? It really does sound like something we shouldn't be talking about.
Zing.
Oh, I thought we were. No.
Oh, Lordy. So Francesco goes to get a pick and a shovel. And as he's walking through the rows of tombs, we see the shadow of the Grim Reaper, which is important in a little while. And then we see this couple creepy shots of someone running behind the tombstones, like just out of focus. And then eventually Claudio's like creepy ass girlfriend attacks him and is demanding to know if the rumors are true, if the dead come back, because she needs to know if Claudio only loved her. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Get the hell off of me. It just kind of shoves her away and she starts crying. Then we cut to later that night. We see Francesco in the shower with like just mud pouring off of him. And Nagi is watching TV while sloppily eating ice cream with headphones on. And then the power kind of like fizzles out for a second. Francesco looks up, you know, sees the power goes back on, and then he hears someone like rustling around in his apartment, and he starts yelling for Nagi, asking if it's him. And now we get what I wrote in here, the naked zombie Boy Scout tussle. Because the zombie Boy Scouts show up and Francesco has to dispatch them while naked, which is just really disturbing.
I want to know why there's an electrical box in the shower.
I had that same question. I'm like, what?
Like, is that just there to electrocute yourself later on? What is that?
He did want to die, so maybe. It was simpler times.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so real simple.
So he's fighting off the Boy Scouts, you know, shooting him in the head, cracking another one's head on a table, the whole time yelling for Nagi, who doesn't hear him because he's got his headphones on. And downstairs, we see a zombie nun coming up behind Nagi. Francesco gets down there, shoots the zombie nun. A zombie Boy Scout jumps in from behind and almost bites him. They start fighting on the ground. He kills the zombie, and the zombie's hand slaps the remote, turning to a horror movie. And Francesco reflexively shoots the television, thinking it's another zombie. And then that's when Nagi notices. He flips out because he broke his TV. He's like, nah, what the fuck?
That wasn't very nice of him.
No, it wasn't. Oh, man.
It was like worse than when he puked on Valentina. Like, he was like, not my TV.
Yeah, he was very upset about this. So he blows out the fires inside of his TV all lovingly. He's just blowing out the fire. And he goes, get your shovel and come help me. And they go to bury the other zombies. And while they're out there, they hear this soft crying. And they start looking around, and they find the creepy Claudio girlfriend weeping on his grave. And the ground starts to rumble. And Francesco starts yelling at her to get the fuck away from there. And she's like, no, leave me alone. I stay here. And then Claudio explodes out of the grave, riding his busted motorcycle.
I just wrote, zombies on bikes.
And he looks like in Hellraiser Part 3 when like when like the cameraman comes through and then there's the Cenobite with like the CD sticking out of his face. Like that's what it reminded me of. I was waiting for Pinhead to make an appearance.
It, you know what it reminded me of was in Elm Street 5. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, the Dream Child. The one guy gets turned into what they lovingly call the Iron Man, where he's like fused with a motorcycle and they have like hoses and tubes like going up into his arms. That's kind of what it reminded me of, because he has like a hose sticking out of his head. He's got like,
he's got a light blinking behind his eye.
I love how they did no work on him. They just buried him as he was.
But Valentina, they very gingerly reconstructed her entire skull.
In one day.
And wore the head back on.
That's because she was the mayor's daughter.
And she only had, like, a little bit of scarring where you could see the stitching.
Right. So the motorcycle zombie goes driving away, and she runs after, going, Claudio, don't leave me! Just chases after. So Francesco's like, oh, shit, and goes after the both of them. And there's a little cutscene with the girl falling down and Claudio stopping his bike and her begging him to tell her that he only loved her. And he's standing there or sitting on his bike grinning. And then he reaches out to her and she jumps on the back of his motorcycle and they drive off. So now we cut to Francesco finding them and we hear her kind of moaning and what sounds like chewing. And then we see why. He's eating her arm. And she goes,
he's only eating me.
he was eating her out.
Yeah, exactly. But I love it because you're right. He goes, he's only eating me. Go away. I shall be eaten by whoever I choose.
She's a real, ready, dumb bitch.
Language.
Oh, man. So now Francesco shoots Claudio in the head and accidentally kills Claudio's psycho girlfriend, and because it goes through his head and into hers. And he's kind of taken aback at first. He says that, like, killing the narration says that killing the dead is a public service, while killing the living is generally frowned upon.
It's called murder.
Exactly. So then he goes to throw them both in the grave together, and he tells Nagi to bury that. He goes, this way they'll be together forever. And Nagi looks at him like, nah. And he goes, what? I'm sentimental. And they bury the two of them together. So now we cut to the next day with Nagi playing violin at the dead mayor's grave. And he decides, I'm a digger up. So he starts digging up the corpse. And we see the glass coffin. And he wipes all the dirt off of it and goes to give it a big old smooch. And she wakes up. So he freaks out, breaks the glass, and rips her head off.
I mean, I don't feel like it was on really securely to begin with, but he probably does have, like, incredible strength.
Yeah, well, not only that, though, he made a small hole. It wasn't like he was trying to get the whole body. He just pulled the head out.
That's true.
But then he sets her head down, he climbs up out of the grave and crawls over to her, and she's like, oh, wait. She goes, don't I know you? And he goes, blah. And she goes, oh, yeah, you puked on me. How sweet. I feel like Susie just got a headache.
Oh my god.
So he goes to kiss her, and this part I didn't understand, because he goes to kiss her and she backs up, and then he hides his face, and she goes, I like shy boys, and after all, you should never refuse a kiss, and who am I to argue? It's like, but you just tried to get away. Like, well, huh?
She must have came to her senses.
She's like, well, I'm only ahead now, so.
She's like, I gotta get what I can get.
Right.
So
and he got some, and he got ahead.
But I mean, that's really all he needs.
Yeah,
it's true.
Well,
this is the part that like made me optimistic that the movie was going to turn around, because he's walking away, and her severed head is just like hopping along like a frog.
Right. It's like a little white viper. Yeah.
He's playing the violin, walking away, and she's scooching behind him. And that was oddly creepy looking, just to see this creepy severed head moving along the ground like that. I was like, I don't like any of that. That's spooky.
It was very like The Thing, like,
yes,
very much, yeah. like you expected tentacles to come out.
Right. So
his tentacle came out later.
Well, now we cut to Nagi in Francesco's apartment cooking. And but while the food is cooking, he's putting together the skull on the desk, like with super fast speed. Like he's piecing this thing together like nothing. And then he hears Francesco coming, and he quickly takes it apart and plays dumb and acts like he doesn't know how to do it. And Francesco kind of laughs at him, and he's like, oh, he's like, if I can't do it, imagine you putting it together. And it's like, okay, so clearly he is smart on some things. And then he piles up two plates of spaghetti, banana slices, and hunks of bread.
I thought I saw some cucumbers, but maybe that was bananas.
There was some kind of vegetation.
I was going to say, I saw bananas.
And I don't know, there were little weird-looking, like, blackish things in there. I don't know if those were raisins or olives or what, but there was something in that spaghetti, too. And because Francesco goes, he's like, you really are disgusting when you eat, you know that? And he goes, nah. And he goes, oh, I suppose you're right. It all ends up in the same place anyway. Once again, everyone understands Nagi. Nagi goes down to his room with the two plates of food. And Francesco kind of realizes something is up and hears giggling coming from Nagi's room. But then he hears a bang outside and goes to investigate. So now we see the widow is back, and she's all zombified with like flowing death shroud all around her.
didn't we see? I thought we watched Swamp Thing last week.
She was very swampy.
That's what my take was, but yeah.
So now she goes zooming at him, like doing that weird like ghost movement that we see in horror movies where they just pick a pose and fly forward in that pose. And she gets up to him, they start making out, and he's like, "No, I can't." And she's like, "Yes, you can," and starts like nibbling on his chest and tearing his shirt. And for a second there, I thought we were gonna get titty jerky again. Cause she bit
on his chest.
Yeah, well, she bit that nipple.
I didn't think his nipple could go that far. Holy shit, that thing was stretchy.
Do you know what rule almost got broken?
What's that?
No corpse diddling.
That's true. Henry taught us these things.
Yes, no corpse diddling, no sister fucking.
Exactly. So they start kind of making out and getting into it, and she then bites his neck and, like, tears out a hunk of his flesh. And he starts screaming bloody murder. Nagi comes running up with the spade and slaps her in the head and cracks her skull open. So she's now dead. Francesco's kind of cradling her, and he realizes, he says this, he goes, "I killed her." And Nagi goes, "Nah." And he points with his spade like, "I did. Like, don't steal my work, fool." But then he goes, "No, don't you understand? When I shot her, I had my eyes closed. She wasn't truly dead." Now, which doesn't make any sense, because she was examined by the doctor, who said she died. She was turning blue. She was laying on a grave. There were flies buzzing around her. She was dead. D-E-D, dead. So what the fuck?
I got hit by a bus.
Well, guess what? What the fuck is what I've been saying since the beginning of the movie.
Me too. And then he says something shitty like, "I killed the only woman I ever loved. You knew her for 2 fucking hours.
But he obsessed about her for 2 weeks. So
but even at one point she calls him her love. So it's like, what the hell?
Right, what's going on with this movie? So he goes on to say, like, because he goes on talking to, like, he's in the shower, he's cleaning up his wound, and he's kind of narrating to himself how, like, it's a good thing that the bite can't turn you. And he says, "But does this mean I'm going to come back when I die?" And he goes, "Oh, poor Nagi, he wouldn't have the heart to kill me." And he steps out of the shower, and Nagi's there with the spade, going, "Ah!" Like, pointing it at him.
Oh, yeah, he's like, "I'm not dead yet."
Yeah, he goes, "Damn it, a bite can't kill you," and he pushes him away. Oh, man, that was funny. But so the next day, we see that they're burning garbage, and Nagi dumps old phone books into the fire, and Franco flips out, being like, "These are classics, they're my favorite reads." It's like, okay.
They weren't burning, it wasn't true garbage, they didn't burn this film.
You almost got me to spit my coffee.
I heard it.
So he gets all mad that he's burning his favorite books. And Nagi walks away like, meh. It goes walking off. And then the burning trash kind of swirls and forms the Grim Reaper. And
he looked like Skeletor.
Yep.
I thought he looked pretty badass. Like, I really liked it.
I actually thought it was a great visual of death.
I did, too.
I'm not knocking it. I'm saying he reminded me of Skeletor.
"I'll get you, He-Man."
"I'll get you, Stella Marte."
"I don't want to feel good. I want to feel evil."
"And I'll get you, sidekick too, Mr. Niagi."
See, now I'm not going to be able to not hear his voice when I'm... Because he's like, "Stop killing the dead. They're mine." So he tells Francesco to stop killing the dead. And he says, "If you don't want the dead coming back to life, why not just kill the living?" And then we cut to Francesco on the phone with his friend Franco. And a zombie comes to the door. He kills it. And we cut outside. And we see just like a parade of corpses coming into the apartment, getting shot while he's having this conversation, and Nagi's just throwing him in a wheelbarrow and like wheeling him down to their graves. Like, just neither one is phased at all about this. And we cut back to Francesco talking on the phone. He passes out while talking, and he's doing this whole thing about, like, you know, what is real anyway? Like, is there even a rest of the world? Is it only here? Do we just kind of exist in a bubble type of thing? And as he falls asleep, we get a montage of him driving around the city in his little punch bug, shooting random people. He's like, and you said I didn't have a dick? Pow.
And you said I didn't have a dick. You said I didn't have a dick. You said I didn't have a dick.
You get a bullet, and you get a bullet.
Right.
So he goes and wipes out, like, a whole plaza. And then we cut to the cop at his door on the next morning. And he wants to know where he was between 11 and 12:30 the previous night. And the cop tells him it's because his car was seen at the site of this murder. And he thinks it wasn't Francesco. He thinks it was Nagi. And Francesco's like, well, let me go talk to Nagi first. And then he goes down to the apartment and immediately notices the fucked up smell. And he finds Victoria's head in the broken television singing to Nagi.
Valentina.
I keep saying Victoria. Yeah, Valentina.
So you know what that scene, what she became right there?
What's that?
She was Jambi. The next song, it was cut short. Her set was cut short. She was going to turn Mecha Lekka Hai, Mecha Hai Ni Ho into a song, into a folk song.
That would be amazing.
She even had, like, the blue hue already, and...
Right. She's the Italian Jambi.
Yep.
Oh, man. So, they just completely drop the whole talking to the cop thing at this point. Like, he's going to talk to Nagi to warn him about the whole murder, but he sees the head... They start talking. He's like telling him, like, you can't keep her down here, blah, blah, blah. And then the mayor shows up and wants to have photos taken with his dead daughter so he can prove to the public that he has also undergone some grief and that then maybe they'll reelect him.
This is who does a photo shoot with a dead body?
Right. And again, like I said, they just drop the whole wanting to know who killed these people in the plaza. Like, it just never gets brought up again.
Well, it's just a bunch of bikers.
Before the simpler times, we'll call it the olden times, people did take pictures with their dead relatives.
True.
But
well, they took pictures of their dead relatives. I don't know if they took pictures with them.
No, they did. They used to pose them in, like, the parlor, and they would take... There's actually a whole... It's creepy as fuck. It was an old practice where they would pose the families with the corpses.
Oh, see, I didn't know the families were posing with the. I knew of the pictures being of the corpses being posed, but I never knew, like, families were, like, the living were with the dead in the pictures.
Yeah, well, no,
we got to bring it back at the next funeral. selfies with grandma.
It is a tradition in my family to take pictures of the body in the car. I had to do it one last time a couple weeks ago.
I think that's creepy.
See, this
if I saw someone taking a picture of my relative, I'd probably tell them to get the hell out.
I actually had to stop my cousin because she wanted to Snapchat. I was like,
my goodness.
Oh, wow.
She's like, can I Snapchat? I was like, no, you cannot Snapchat your aunt.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's not cool.
Oh, my God.
People taking selfies.
I was like, I'm all for it, but everybody else won't be. So
oh, damn. So they go to dig up the body, and this just makes no sense. First of all, Francesco digs up the corpse in like 30 seconds. Like, was it sand? What the fuck? He was in there fast. And then we see the broken coffin, and the photographer.
That's why he's an engineer.
I'm not an engineer.
He works to perform that fast as an engineer, digging up the dirt.
He's
6 feet of dirt.
He's figured something out, that's for sure. But so I love it because the photographer goes, so do I take a picture from the neck down? and they see that her head's missing. And the mayor goes, good Lord, where did her head go? And Francesco just shrugs and lights a cigarette like,
Daddy, I'm over here.
Yeah, then out of nowhere, Valentina starts calling for her daddy. And he
daddy
goes,
poo.
He goes running for looking for her. And he goes into Nagi's
room. You hear that?
He goes into Nagi's room and he's like, oh, dear Lord, the smell. And she goes, sorry, Daddy, that's my fault. And then he goes, why are you on TV? She's not on TV. She's in the TV.
So oh, it's the scent is a mixture of her rotting head and the fact that she's a human cum pit.
Oh, is that what Nagi was wiping off her chin? Like I said?
Yeah.
So gross.
All right. So when she goes, when he says, he can't live like this or something.
No, she goes, she asks, I want your blessing for me and Nagi to get married.
Oh, that's right.
And he says, not as long as I have breath in my body. And she goes, okay.
And therefore the worst visualization I've ever seen in a movie.
Oh, come on. I liked the inside the mouth cam.
It looked like a dollar store ball getting thrown at the guy.
You're probably not wrong. They put a wig on a ball and threw it. Oh,
so after I see this, I write down in my notes, what the fuck am I watching? This is the point of the movie where I actually had to write down what I was thinking.
It took you this long?
No, I was saying it in my head, but this is where I finally said it out loud.
Well, yeah, as Maurice explained, we get the flying head chomp, the self-propelled severed head flying chomp. She flies at her father's neck and just is like hovering and chewing on his neck. So like somehow this head is able to fly. So Francesco comes in and he kills Valentina. He shoots her, well, shoots the head, and the mayor falls down dead. And of course, Nagi's all upset. He starts cradling the destroyed head.
I know what you're going to say next, because I laugh at this part too.
Where the officer comes in?
Where the photographer comes in.
Yes! The officer comes in. And oh my God, he goes, who killed the mayor? And Francesco goes, oh, it wasn't me or Nagi. Go ahead and take a mold of our teeth. They won't match. And then he goes, then who did? And he goes, it won't be your first unsolved mystery, now will it? And then the photographer comes in and goes, smile. And Francesco looks up and grins while everyone else is like confused looking. Oh man, that scene cracked me up. But so we cut to Francesco and Nagi talking, and he's trying to comfort him. And, you know, he's telling him, once again, that everybody dies, you know. And he goes, I don't even know why you wanted her. He goes, she was a child after all. And Nagi's like, meh. We cut to the zombie mayor coming back to life and climbing one of the tombs for some reason. And Francesco's like
King Kong.
Right. And Francesco's yelling at him, like, get down from there. What are you doing? You're supposed to be the mayor. Set a good example.
I just wrote, oh, dead mayor, you bad returner.
I didn't shoot him, does he?
Yeah, because he goes, I can do what I want. I am the mayor.
He shoots him an engineer. He calls him an engineer again.
That's right. He shoots him in the head and he falls off.
For the last time, I'm not a fucking engineer.
Kablamo. Now, the new mayor shows up the next day, and we see that Nagi and Francesco are putting up barbed wire fencing around the top of the walls. And he asks him, why are you putting up the barbed wire? Are people breaking in? And he goes, no, but sometimes they break out. And then he goes on about how he heard about the dead returning. He goes, that can't be true. And he hands him the M3 form that his friend Franco filled out for him to get overtime pay. And he goes, oh, no, that's just a rumor. And he goes, oh, good, then you can sign here and we won't have to worry about this any longer. If the press got a hold of this, they'd have a field day with it. You know, so he signs away that, you know, that's bullshit, signs the denial. And we meet the new mayor's secretary, who is the widow. So a different version of the widow, but the widow.
I called her second she.
Second she, that's actually completely accurate.
But her friend calls her Laura later on.
Oh, the third version of she.
That's the third she.
Oh, yeah, it's the third version. Oh, yeah.
So
I probably fell asleep again.
So now we cut to later that night, and the secretary is knocking on Francesco's door. He answers it with a gun, and she faints. And he's like, oh, shit. And he pulls her inside. She wakes up and says that she feels like she's known him forever, that she's loved him forever. And I just wrote, okay, because none of that made any sense.
Isn't that when she says, I can only love impotent men?
Well, yes. She goes, is it true what they say about you in town? Are you really? And he goes, oh, no, no, no. And she goes, because I can only love an impotent man. He goes, oh, yes, 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 it's true. Like, he changes his tune right quick. And then she goes on to explain how basically she's terrified of wieners. She's like,
yeah, she's like, I love you. I don't want your dick.
Yeah, she's like, I do like men, but the thought of their manhood terrifies me. So she's got a penis phobia. And so now we cut to Francesco at the doctor's office. Now, this is a pretty extreme reaction, in my opinion. Well, because he does tell...
No, they have sex.
No, you're thinking of part three.
No.
No, because they don't. They're kind of making out and, like, she's rubbing on him. They're not having sex. They're making out. And he tells her that he doesn't even have one. And because she doesn't get to see yet, because he cuts to the doctor's office.
Okay, that's right.
And this is a really extreme reaction, in my opinion. He wants the doctor to give him a dickectomy. He's like,
pretty much.
Take it off. I don't want it anymore. And the doctor is like freaking out. He's like, I can't do this. And he's like, I'll pay you. And he goes, there are people with perfectly good diseases in the waiting room. that cracked me up. So we get him on the table. He's got his feet up in the stirrups. He's coming at him with a set of gardening shears.
How big is this damn dick?
I mean, it's pretty big, I guess.
It must be, because when he stands up and drops his drawers, oh, that's the other thing I missed. Because the doctor's like, come on, the whole town knows you don't actually have one of those. And he stands up
and drops it out.
And the doctor looks scared. He's like, well then. he's clearly frightened. But so he goes to chop it off and he almost faints and he's like, I can't do it. Don't make me do this today. And he's like, come on, what are you waiting for? And he pulls out this giant syringe and he goes, I said no anesthetic. So not only does he want his dick cut off, but he doesn't want any anesthetic while it happens. Like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
But then the doctor's like, no, I can't do it, but I can make your snake stop slithering.
Pretty much.
He's the Dan Aykroyd of Dick Dickstectomies.
Well, so then he gives him like the horse syringe of like orange liquid. He's telling him that it won't work. He said it'll be just like you don't have one. And he goes, where does that have to go? Now, a second ago, you weren't worried about getting your Johnson chopped off with some gardening shears and no anesthetic. And now you're worried about a needle being shoved into your Johnson. Like, what the fuck? I don't get it.
Right.
So he crams it in there and we see Francesco freaking out. And we cut to the next scene of him laying in bed, like looking all sick. And he says, that butcher gave me an infection. And Nagi's just sitting there trying to feed him soup going, nah.
Oh, Dopey always takes care of him.
So we hear the knock on the door, and you know Francesco doesn't want anyone to see him until the infection is cleared up. So he's like, if it's her, tell her to go away. So Nagi goes and kind of shoos her off, and then we cut to we see Nagi like kind of out in the graveyard by the mayor's daughter's grave. And Francesco walks out and says, you know, he's feeling better. Nagi picks him up, gives him a hug, and he slaps Nagi on the butt for some reason. And then the secretary shows up. This part is fucked. It's all kinds of fucked.
She's like, I got raped. Now I love sex, and I'll be marrying my rapist. Wait, what? Yeah.
That is exactly it in a nutshell. She tells him that she can't marry him because the mayor raped her, and it was wonderful. And she goes, well, not the violence part, but the sex. And then we did it again nicely, and I loved it. And it's like, what the fuck? None of this is okay. And she tells him how she couldn't love him now that, you know, she likes dick, basically, and that he's impotent, but she couldn't be with him. She goes, but I'll always love you. And the mayor knows all about it. I love how she's now calling her betrothed just the mayor. Like, he doesn't have a name. He's the mayor.
He's the rapist.
The rapist for 200?
Yes.
I just keep picturing, like, do you take the mayor as your husband? Like... So he's all pissed off, and she scampers off to go live her happy life with her rapist, and Francesco is left alone yet again. So I forget what happens. Like, doesn't it cut to him like driving around town looking at people pissed off?
Yes, and then I believe he meets the girls. And they're like, hey, give us the third sheet.
Right. I was like, I couldn't remember where it cut to after that, but yes. He's driving around, like, looking at people angrily, and ends up at this little diner drinking a cup of coffee, and this girl shows up and asks if he could give her a ride, her and her friend. So he goes outside, and of course, the friend, Laura, as Maurice said, is the third incarnation of she, and gives him a ride back to their apartment, and they ask him in, and she's like, oh, you're not afraid of two college girls, are you? And he's like, oh, I don't know. And then Laura comes around on the other side and says, grant a wish, or make a wish, I grant wishes. And he holds up a cigarette and he says, I wish for you to love me, and goes to light it. And she lights her cigarette with his and says, I already do. And it's like, what the fuck is going on in Italy?
Seriously.
Like, you should be saying, what the fuck is going on in this movie? Not Italy.
I don't know, man. The way they portray love in horror movies is really weird. Like, I met you 2 seconds ago, but I would die for you. Like, wait, what? Like, doesn't make any sense.
Guys, that's how all Italians are. Don't you know that?
Oh, God. So, yeah, so they go inside, and she walks in her room, and she goes, ooh, it's so cold in here, and immediately starts stripping. It's like, wait, you just said how cold you were. But she turns on her little heater and she goes, there's a sink there if you want to wash up. So he starts washing his face and she goes, I didn't mean your face. Which had me in fucking tears. She's like, I want you to sink wash your boys. So they get into it and he tells her, I'm not sure if I can do this. I'm on some medication. And then it cuts to them naked, sweaty, and exhausted, dropping onto the bed. And she goes, I don't think your medication is working. Once again, that part made me laugh out loud.
And then she asks where he's going after they're finished. He's like, well, or she says, I've come 3 times already. He said, no, twice. The third was fake.
Yeah, because he tries to go again. And she goes, can't we just rest? You've already come 3 times. And he goes, twice. The second was faked. or the third. Oh, yeah, the third was faked. And then he gets up and goes out to the living room to get some wine. And the other girl tells him to be quiet, that their third roommate is passed out. She had been studying all night. And she goes, I'll get you some wine. And then she goes, did Laura tell you to pay me? And he goes, wait, what? And she goes, yeah, you got to pay. And he's like, I thought she really cared. And he's like, oh, no, that'll be 150. Because, like, oh, if she made you think she cared, that's extra. And then he goes, she asked me to spend the night. And she goes, oh, that's 200.
What is it with people not understanding in other countries, like, prostitution? Like, we saw it in Castle Freak.
Right.
And now we see it in this atrocity.
So, but his reaction, again, is a little fucking extreme, because he goes back into the bedroom.
My God.
She's like, oh, I'm cold. Come back to bed. He picks up the heater, puts it in the bed and throws the sheet over and goes, there, now you'll be warm forever. And it starts on fire.
Now, how did she not realize the difference between a body and a metal heater? Furthermore, she could have easily survived. They all could have easily survived.
Well, I don't know. I think that place was made out of gasoline with how quick it went up.
That's true.
Because it ignited fast. It was all them bottles of wine all over the place.
I was just thinking that.
So now we cut to the next day, and we see the cop is showing up yet again, and he hands Francesco the remnants of a burnt check and tells him not to worry, that they already found the killer. And he goes, we're both worldly men. I figured you wouldn't want anyone to see this. So basically, hey, I fucked him too, just like the lawyer in Castle Freak.
Yep.
Who was like, hey, there's no shame. I fucked it too.
We are Eskimo brothers.
Oh, Lordy. So he tells him that, you know, like I said, the person that started the fire is caught. And in the, he admitted to it. He said he went home. He started the fire, went home, killed his wife and daughter, and then went right to the police station and turned himself in. And now he's at the psych hospital. And he walks away, and Francesco's pissed off. He's like, someone is stealing my murders. Someone's stolen my crimes. That's what he said. It's like, okay, that doesn't make any sense, but whatever. So he goes to the psych hospital, and we find out that it's his buddy Franco. That's the person who was taking credit for his crimes. So he wants to know why, and he's sitting there talking to the comatose Franco. The nun walks in as Francesco's lighting a cigarette, and she goes, you can't smoke in here, what are you doing? He just turns and shoots her in the face.
Yep.
So she falls down dead, and he goes back to his conversation, and the doctor comes in and he goes, oh,
this
sister
is my favorite.
Sister, what are you doing on the floor? And he goes, praying. And then he talks about how he goes, well, his family is dead. Do you, as his friend, do you want to give consent to pull the plug? He goes, if it was up to me, I'd already have pulled it. And then he turns and he shoots the doctor. So the doctor falls down dead, and he continues his conversation with Franco, trying to figure out, like, you know, why he did what he did. And then the nurse comes in and goes, oh my God, what happened here? And he goes, it was a quarrel. They killed each other. And he goes, what, don't you believe me? She goes, no. So he shoots her in the face. Oh, my God. I was crying during the scene. It was so fucking silly. So then he takes off, and we see people running all around the hospital, freaking out. And the cop is there again. And he goes, oh, Della Morte. He goes, there's another lunatic on the loose. He's already killed three people upstairs. Now, Francesco's holding his gun. And he goes, oh, I see you have a gun. You're already armed. Good. You can protect yourself.
This guy is an imbecile.
He is the worst cop ever. Oh, man. So Francesco gets pissed and he yells that it was him, but nobody cares. No one hears him. So we cut to Francesco at night in the cemetery. He's drinking and shooting the statues. And he starts yelling at the statue that looks like Death. He's saying, he's done, I'm getting out, you know, I can't take this anymore. And then Death appears in the statue and says, where do you think you're going if you haven't yet understood the difference between life and me? So it's like, okay, weird little riddle there. We cut to the next day, we see Nagi and Francesco are leaving. They're like fixing up the car and packing it up. They speed down the road, nearly hitting an old woman on a bike who falls off, and Nagi goes, nah! And he goes, yeah, I know I missed her, but I'll get the next one. Oh, man.
So he runs over a rock.
Yeah, he's like, I know every bump in this road. See, there was one right there.
Yeah, because Nagi gets upset that they're speeding so fast. And he holds, like, he puts his hands on the dashboard. And that's what he, yeah, the whole every bump in the road thing. And so they go through this tunnel. And he's saying, like, isn't it exciting? On the other side of this tunnel is the rest of the world. He goes, we've never been this far. So they're driving through the tunnel. Nagi falls asleep. And, you know, it's getting almost like hypnotic. We're just seeing the lights pass by the car. And then this big white light, very, very reminiscent of In the Mouth of Madness when they're going yes. across the bridge. And this big bright light, they come out on the other side. Francesco hits the brakes. We see that the coffin that Nagi had packed on the roof goes flying off. Nagi cracks his head on the dashboard. And he's like, nah, just like freaking out, wakes up. And we see that the road is gone. Like, there's nothing there.
Like and, in Silent Hill.
Yeah, very, very much. That's actually a very good call. I didn't think of that. But yeah, he gets out of the car and he says, I should have known it. The rest of the world doesn't exist. And Nagi staggers out holding his head and falls over, just kind of like moaning. And he's like, oh, come on, you didn't hit your head that hard. He's like, Nagi, stay with me. And it looks like Nagi has died. And then we cut to Francesco loading his gun. And he narrates, he says, death, death, death comes sweeping down. Filthy death, the leering clown. Death on wings, death by surprise. Failing evil from worldly eyes. Death that's born as life succumbs, while death and love to kindred drums. Beat the tone to judgment day, an actor in a passion play, without beginning, without end, evermore, amen. And then Francesco kneels down by Nagi, and it starts snowing on them. And he tells him that he was his best friend, and he didn't even realize it. And he's holding the gun, and then Nagi wakes up. He looks at the gun, he looks at Francesco, he grabs the gun and throws it into the abyss. And then Nagi looks at him and says, can you take me home now, please? And Francesco answers, nah. And then it cuts out, and we see they're in the snow globe from the beginning credits, mm-hmm. and the end credits roll.
So the interesting Finally. Thing about this last scene, I know, right? So when Dopey comes, like, stumbling out, when he's laying on the ground before it looks like he dies, he's supposed to be having a seizure.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are they saying? The seizure fixed him?
I don't know, I guess.
and it broke Francesco? Because he went...
Or maybe the snow globe got shooka-shooka, and they switched places, maybe? I don't know. I didn't understand the end. I didn't like the movie.
Maybe it was just like the end of Saint Elsewhere.
That's very true.
I don't understand that.
Do your research. Do your research. No. The end of Saint Elsewhere, it was all in an autistic kid's mind who was looking into a snow globe.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wasn't that one of, like, the great television shows of the 80s?
Yep.
Okay. So, like, at the end of Newhart, when he wakes up and it was all a dream.
It was all the last show, dream from the last show he did. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh man, so I didn't really grab much in the way of like trivia or anything that we haven't already mentioned. Like we mentioned the kissing scene, you know, as the painting the lovers. I mentioned how Dylan Dog's look was based on Rupert Everett. And that's really, there's really not a lot of stuff that I grabbed. Maurice, did you grab anything?
Yeah.
What do you got?
I do too.
I grabbed that they should have burned the script along with the house. No, I read that the Returners get their energy from Mandragola roots. Okay.
Okay.
Now, a mandrake is the root of the plant.
Right.
It's in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So the mandrake. So the root of the plant gives these things their energy.
You know what? I wonder if that's what they were trying to show us when the one popped up and had like a tree growing out of it.
If you notice, like almost all of them have like a stick growing out of them.
That's true. They all have some kind of roots on them.
Right. I read somewhere that that's what the director was trying to convey, but it never really came through is how he put it or something like that. So he just never decided to explain it.
But I thought that was kind of cool. And like I said earlier, the hard rock music you heard during the movie was an instrumental version of Hellraiser by Ozzy Osbourne.
Nice.
And, you know, my favorite part about the movie.
I was going to say, so at least there were a few saving graces for you.
There was one. Well, no, there was two. Ozzy Osbourne and the ending.
What about them titties? I thought you'd be...
I mean, I'm not going to lie. It made it a lot better.
Now, here's the real question. Were they better than Arcane's titties from last week?
Oh, no, Arcane's were way better.
So, Dawn, you said you found some stuff. What did you find?
Yeah, I think I found something where, like, Rupert Everett actually wanted to get it remade, shortly after he was starting to become well-known. But I guess the studios were behind that, but they didn't want Rupert Everett. They wanted, like, Matt Dillon to play the part.
I did read that, yeah, that he wanted an American version.
Yes. Remake.
You say Matt Dillon, but in my head I heard Matt Damon!
Matt Damon. I believe it was Matt Dillon. I don't think it was Matt Damon, but I believe it was Matt Dillon.
No, I know, but I still heard that in my head.
It was Matt Dillon.
Matt Damon.
Was it Matt Dillon, or who's the famous Dillon from the 80s movies?
There was Matt Dillon and then his brother Kevin, but Kevin's only famous for being Johnny Drama.
No, he played in The Blob. He was in The Blob.
True, The Blob.
Wasn't he Mullet Dirt Bike in The Blob?
Yes, he was.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah, apparently they were planning to do a sequel to this in the early 2000s, but it just kind of fell through. Yeah, well, it ain't going to happen, so, you know.
So on a scale of 0 to never watch this, I recommend never watch this. Ever.
Wow, we have an even split for the first time ever. Yep. I don't know. I have to say I fully enjoy it. It's ridiculous. It's funny. I love the strange effects, like the beach ball being thrown with the teeth.
The little lights on flames the little flame balls on strings.
Yep. They're basically lit up ping pong balls. Yeah. I think it's fun.
I want to hear Susie's opinion.
Yeah.
I think we've heard my opinion. There's no redeeming qualities in this movie. I didn't like it. I found it stupid.
Stupid.
I really wanted to like it, and yes, I did laugh at a couple moments. I was very entertained by the hopping severed head, but it did not do it for me. And like yesterday, Shane's like, "All right, we ate dinner, and I'll start watching your movie." I'm like, "Okay." So then I go in the bedroom and I'm putzing around because I'm like, I don't think I'm gonna like this movie. And then he comes in the bedroom, and he's like, "Will you stop dicking around and just go watch it?" And then when I was done watching it, I summoned him. I said, "You can come back in the living room now." I didn't even ask him if he wanted to watch it with me.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Like I've said many a times with movies that I love, there's a lot of movies that I really enjoy that I know full well are bad movies, and I can't in good conscience recommend someone else to watch. Like, Jess asked me, like, "What are you guys covering?" And I was like, "Cemetery Man." She goes, "Did I see that?" And I went, "No." She goes, "Should I watch it?" I went, "No." Because I know she won't like it. You know, so it's like, there are just certain films that, okay, another perfect example, friggin' Man-Thing. Now, we've talked about this a lot. I hate that movie, but love how ridiculous it is. And once we get it on here, which eventually it will, that we've tried twice and it's failed both times, but we have a trump card we haven't used yet. Mm-hmm. When we do eventually get it on this show, I know I am going to enjoy watching it because of how stupid it is. But again, I can't recommend it to somebody. So that's kind of how I feel about this, where it's like, I fully enjoy it knowing that it's bad. It's like eating junk food. You can't recommend it to someone. Like, you probably shouldn't put that in your body. Like, you're going to regret it later, but damn, does it taste good. You know, that's kind of how I feel about this.
See, I love this movie. I've always loved this movie. And I've only heard anybody else. This is the first time I've heard people actually not liking the movie. Like, that's what I don't get. Like, I've always loved this movie. And when you can find, like, people who know it, they always praise it. I'm like, rewatching it, like, I haven't seen it in, like, 20 years. I was reminded of, like, some of the great, like, Mike knows, I was telling him some of the things as I was watching it. I was like, oh my God, I totally forgot about this part. And I was just like, I watched it late and I wanted to rewatch it immediately after I stopped watching it, but I had to get up and go to work.
See, now that's a testament, because there's only a couple movies I've done that with where as soon as it's been over, I've started it over again. The only two that come immediately to mind, I know there's more than two, but Mallrats, the first time I watched Mallrats, I had rented it. And I laughed so fucking hard throughout the movie when it was done. I'm like, and we're watching that again. And it just went right back in. And then Hobo with a Shotgun. That's the only other one I can think of. Which, if I can find a way to get that on this show, oh, I will. Because it is one of my favorite movies of all time. I friggin' love that movie way more than anyone should. But, so yeah, I think, like I said, I think it's pretty even split. We got two people saying they enjoyed and two people saying, why did this exist? Yep. So we are going to be wrapping up our comic book movies next week with Trailer Park of Terror, which, much like the first, movie we chose this month, I think will be the only other time we are saying it's a solid film. Because it's a fun flick and the comic book was really good. So I'm looking forward to covering that one, but, we haven't posted the, next grouping of movies, but by the time you, listen to this, we'll have already posted it. We're going to be covering Ghosts next. So that's going to be fun.
Spooky.
Spooky, spooky ghosts.
So you're only doing that Patrick Swayze movie all next month?
Yes.
Well, if Maurice was going to have anything to do with it, he did vote for that. So
I did.
Oh, man. So does anyone else have anything they want to add
before we wrap this up? No, I'm done talking about this.
Maurice?
I have nothing nice to say, so I'll stop it there.
And what about our... Right there. A reoccurring character.
No, I don't have anything else. I think they've suffered enough. I think we should put them out of their misery.
Alrighty. Well, Dawn, once again, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
It's wonderful to have me here.
I concur. But, so, all right, I think we'll wrap it up here. As always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
I shall return!
Nah!
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.